I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the case against an illegal alien who killed a Washington State Patrol trooper can move forward. Plus, Bob Ferguson prepares to sign a progressive wish list into law. And we've warned you once if you have kids about something called the Teen Council. We'll give you another example today about why you shouldn't let your children be part of it. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Help us reach 300 new paid subscribers over the next 30 days. Go to patreon.com/undivided and use the promo code 300. That's the number 300 for 30% off a year subscription. patreon.com/undivided. Use the promo code 300. Hello and welcome to Undivided on this Monday. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz, and a special welcome to all our new subscribers who are helping us reach that goal of adding 300 new paid subscribers over the next month. We're already well on our way, so thank you for that. Whirlwind morning, so I appreciate you guys allowing us to push the show back an hour today. I wanted to be up in Snohomish County for a critical hearing in the case of the illegal alien who killed Washington State Patrol Trooper Christopher Gadd, or do I have to say allegedly for the lawyers, allegedly killed him, plowed into the back of him at more than 100 miles an hour, well, allegedly high and drunk. So we were concerned about this. We talked about it on the show last week. On the eve of what was supposed to be the start of jury selection in the trial, the defense filed a motion for the case to be thrown out. And that's not unusual, right? Defense's attorneys are going to do their job and they'll find any little reason to have a case thrown out. But what was interesting, concerning about this motion in particular is a couple things. It had to do with the state's sanctuary policies. And look, like, I'm going to get to some clips from court. Everything that happened in court, the outcome is good. Okay, let me just, I don't want to belabor it and leave you waiting. I'll play a little thing from the judge. The judge refused to throw out the case. Here's a clip.
Misconduct alone is not enough. The defense also has to establish prejudice. And the specific misconduct that occurred with regard to the communication between the DP, the prosecutor's employee, and the ICE agent, I don't see how that in and of itself created any prejudice to the defendant. I am denying the defense motion to dismiss also under CR 8.3C.
Yeah, so let me get that out of the way so I can rant and rave about the lunacy that was involved in this. So the case is moving forward this week. There'll be jury selection unless they reach some sort of plea, which can often happen in cases like this one where the evidence is so cut and dry. So if you remember the show last week, but for those who aren't familiar, basically the defense argued that the prosecutors colluded with ICE. So it's a sanctuary state, which means law enforcement and really state agencies can't have any sort of information sharing with ICE on immigration-related issues. And what the defense found out through their process of preparing for trial is that, and this did happen, a staff member in the prosecutor's office had emailed ICE because they were understandably concerned that Raul Benitez Santana was going to be released on a low bail. And so it was basically like, hey, you know, are you guys thinking about detaining him? Because they're concerned this guy's going to get released back into the community. In any state that's not a sanctuary state, that would be a no-brainer thing. That would be the first freaking thing you did. Cops would call the feds like, hey, in case this guy gets out on bail, you know, he's accused of killing a cop. He's in the country illegally, has been for some time, has already had run-ins with law enforcement, but because of our sanctuary policies, we didn't remove him. Any sane, rationally thinking person would want this individual held, really, by any means necessary, and legal, of course. And so that wouldn't be a problem. But just the fact that in our state, our state laws around these things are so dumb that we had to drag, they drove everyone into court this morning. Fellow troopers were there. I believe I saw some family members of Trooper Gadd there. The media is all there. So you can have a 2.5-hour hearing about the merits of dismissing a case because prosecutors contacted ICE about an illegal Mexican national accused of killing a cop. What a clown show. And again, like, the judge in this case made the right ruling, clearly. And I thought this should have taken 10 minutes. I thought we got there at 9 a.m. I thought we should have been in and out. Like, no, we're not dismissing an entire case because you're mad that prosecutors emailed ICE. The judge took a long time to hear arguments again, despite the fact that she had read written briefs, and then took a break and then took a long time in delivering her ruling. And I give her credit for that because I think she senses in this state, you know, the political nature of what's happening, and at the federal level and the anti-Trump. So I think she wanted to show, hey, I'm taking this seriously. And I'm going to judge everything in this case off the merits and careful consideration analysis. So I give Judge Karen Moore a lot of credit for that. I'm not blaming her for this hearing taking 2.5 hours. But it is indicative of how asinine our laws are, that you have to have a 2.5 hour hearing. Because it's actually against the law for prosecutors to collude with ICE to keep a cop killer behind bars. It's so nuts. And I want to play a few things. Because this trial is going to get a lot of publicity in the coming days, not just locally, but nationally as well. There's already been a lot of national stories on this, of course, because we're in the middle of this whole conversation around sanctuary policies and illegal immigration. And Raul Benitez Santana shouldn't even have been in the country. I mean, he came in illegally. There were multiple opportunities to deport him if we weren't a sanctuary state. He shouldn't have been here, and Christopher Gadd should be alive today. So that's one of the key reasons why this is getting so much attention. So it's going to be in the news a lot. So I want you guys to know everything that sort of happened and led up to it. The defense team, public defenders for this illegal alien, and look, defense attorneys have a job to do. I actually was sitting in there, and I was like, good for you. And I know that sounds weird, but these are public defenders who are not phoning it in. They were like, I am going to try so hard to get this case dismissed, which that's a defense attorney's job. So I really don't fault them for that. But I think what we saw today is a precursor to their trial strategy, if this goes that far, because they're making this all about race. Their argument, I kid you not, in trying to get this dismissed and in what we heard from them today is this illegal alien, it's impossible to give him a fair trial in the state of Washington. So we should just let him go. That's basically what they're arguing, is that, so I'll play their key argument that they made about, they think it was like government misconduct that was so severe, it strips their defendant of his constitutional rights. The fact that someone at the prosecutor's office sent a few emails to ICE, here's their main argument.
The state has had a longstanding practice of contacting ICE and communicating with ICE about criminal cases prior to the Keep Washington Working Act's enactment in 2019. Ms. Bernishon, Mr. Darrow's legal assistant, the legal assistant assigned to this case, did not know that the Keep Washington Working Act was passed, prohibiting her from doing this. Ms. Bernishon rotated back into the violent unit in 2023. Meaning she is likely engaged in this type of misconduct for the last 2 years. Counsel is one of the most experienced attorneys in their office. He has been a lawyer since 1991, and he admits in the response brief that he has also been ignorant of Washington state law for the past 6 years since 2019, affecting an unknown number of cases. It has now been confirmed that the state was also in fact having phone calls with ICE in regards to this case. They failed to keep logs up as required by the record retention requirements. And although we had assumed when we sent those subpoenas that ICE had reached out to the state, perhaps in response to media coverage, that was not the case. What we found out from the response brief was the state had actually reached out to ICE. You know, had we known this during the bail hearing last May, we would have addressed that issue differently. The state consulted with a civil lawyer about this in May of last year. After that consultation, counsel did advise Ms. Bernishon to stop her communications with ICE. And despite knowing that that misconduct had taken place, the state kept it a secret. They did not disclose that information. And even more disappointing, in its pleadings, it argued that it is entitled to keep this misconduct a secret. It had no obligation to disclose. And the reason for that is because immigration information is inadmissible at trial.
Yeah, So that's their core argument. We knew about that element of it, although the way they're wording it there and saying prosecutor's office has been doing this in violation of sanctuary policies for years, potentially. So I'm sure you're going to have the left wing, you know, Public Defenders Association or free, whatever it is, come out and look into all these cases involving people who are in the country illegally and try to get them all off the hook. So I'm sure we're going to be hearing about that. But really, their argument goes further. They genuinely argue, like, because our guy is not here legally and he's got brown skin, that we can't even get a fair trial. So you might as well just, what, give him one free pass to kill a cop. Like, every illegal alien gets one free pass to kill a cop because, you know, we, no matter what you do, no matter how hard we try, everyone's racist and everyone's going to be completely biased because they know that he's in the country illegally. So one of the arguments they made, this will now proceed to voir dire, which is jury selection. And they said, look, we can't even, how are we supposed to do jury selection, they argue. Because we want to know if the jury is biased against illegals, right? But we can't ask them that because then we'd be telling them, if they didn't already know, that our defendant is illegal. So we're in a bind. Here again is that defense attorney.
Ms. Meckin and I now have a hamstrung ability to prepare for jury selection. Okay. So we have an issue of Mr. Benito Santana being in custody. We have an issue of the public making death threats against him in the media, which are not being taken down. And we cannot say, we cannot ask questions about what they know or what they assume about his citizenship. So my concern at this point is we bring in a jury. We have an in-depth questionnaire that tries to flesh out some of these issues. We do individual jury selection to see what people have already read, what may have prejudiced them against him without having that information be divulged in the larger panel. Of course, we will do all of that. When we get to the larger panel and those obvious jurors have already been fleshed out, Ms. Mecca and I have no way of bringing this up without also providing that panel information about what has been going on.
Yeah, so just let him go. You know, I really felt like that's what they were arguing. We have no way to root out the right-wing immigrant hater Trump supporter, so just let him go, right? It was wild. So there was something else that happened that, and I feel like you're going to start to see these arguments, especially in this politically charged environment around immigration, pop up more and more often. So it's good that we're talking about them right now. So this defense attorney said one of the other reasons why her client cannot get a fair trial is because his family can't come to court. This was fascinating. So argues basically that his constitutional rights are infringed, going back to the bail proceeding, because his family couldn't come to court to present sort of a united front or show, hey, I've got, you know, family members here that are supportive, you know, and I'm not going to flee from justice. This is something common that happens at a bail hearing. You know, people who are supportive of the defendant will show up and basically promise the judge that they're going to make sure they get back to court and they're going to post bail or whatever it is. So the defense attorney says, well, my client can't have that. Why? Why can't your client's family come to court? Because she said that all his family is concerned that ICE will scoop them up in court. And I'm thinking, every member of this guy's family is illegal? So it just showed the depth of this problem, right? None of his family was in the courtroom today. And so what, and I hated this part, although I do kind of get it. She says that as the case proceeds, what you're going to end up having and what the jury is going to end up seeing is a room full of cops who are pissed off, right? Because this guy killed one of their own. And some of them, you know, might come into court in uniform. And so you'll have all these people here for the victim. And no one here, no one can come for my client to show him support because they're worried they're in the country illegally too. Here's a clip.
What we have is a courtroom that is filled with people who are in support of the state. In past hearings in this case, we have had armed, uniformed officers.
Well, I'll just stop you right there. You can rest assured that we will be taking procedure. We'll be taking steps to ensure that this jury is not overwhelmed by the presence of uniformed law enforcement officers in the gallery.
Yeah, so the judge says, stops her. So she's saying, like, that's not fair. And the judge sort of foreshadows that maybe they're not going to let law enforcement like state troopers be in uniform in the gallery watching the trial as to not unduly prejudice the jury, I might be okay with that. I think that that's fine, because it might be a little intimidating to the jury too if you look out and it's sort of a sea of blue. So I do understand that, but I just think it's this fascinating argument that we can't be fair to my client. He's here illegally, and so are all his friends and family, and so no one can come to court on his behalf, and no one's willing to post his bail because they're worried that if they post the bail, that, you know, their name's on documents, and then ICE will use those documents to go track them down because they're not in the country illegally. And that's sort of a you problem, isn't it? Like, that's not really a criminal justice system problem. That's a you problem for the defendant. We also got a preview today, really quickly before I move on, of I think what the defense strategy is going to be. And I was sort of surprised she talked about it because, you know, you kind of want to keep that to yourself so you can use it as a strategy at trial. But she is going to argue that the whole investigation into the death, the murder of Trooper Christopher Gadd was botched because it was a rush job. Basically, you know, cases like this for other people, when it's not an illegal alien involved or when it's not a member of law enforcement involved, you know, they kind of take their sweet time. But in this case, you know, they wanted a rush job on the toxicology. They wanted all these things, charges to come really, really quickly. And that's, you know, it's nonsense. Of course, this is more high profile. A trooper was killed. And so that is, I think, what the defense is going to say. But all around, you know, I'm glad we went this morning. It's a good ruling. I'm glad the case is going to proceed. I am sure they're going to have a difficult time with jury selection because this case has gotten so much attention, which the judge pointed out to the defense. The judge, before she made her ruling, said, you know, you're kind of arguing that your client's immigration status could turn the jury against him. Yet on the eve of the trial, you filed this very high profile motion. So now we've got 15 members of the media in the courtroom. So if anything, you've brought more attention to your client's immigration status in the days leading up to the trial, which I thought was a very salient point. So good news out of court this morning. Again, thank you for allowing us to delay the live show. I mean, not that you had a choice, right? Not that I asked each and every one of you, but, you know, I do understand that you're very used to our routine, but I think it was important to be there. And also a sign of things to come, a sign of you're going to see more of these arguments from defense counsel when their client is in the country illegally. And I'm sure some judges will bite. This judge happened to be reasonable, thank goodness. But you get a couple cases like this in King County, I'm not so sure that you're going to have the same outcome. So we'll continue to track this case as it progresses forward. All right, I want to play you all a clip from Sundays with Subscribers yesterday. It's just, I mean, I had goosebumps during this interview. At points, I was tearing up watching it back. So you rewind 2 weeks, we're on the campus of the University of Washington for a Riley Gaines appearance. And I did this sort of off-the-cuff five-minute interview with a detransitioner, a biological boy who'd been convinced at a pretty young age that they must be not gay, not traumatized from child sexual assault, but they must be a woman. And so I did this 5 minute interview. It went crazy. And so many of you said, we want to hear more from that person. So their name is Ori. And I mean, the before and after tells it all. I think if you're watching the show, the picture of Ori is around 16 or 17 years old, kind of right when all the, I mean, confusion and pressuring to transition to a girl was being thrust upon him. And then Ori went through years and years of life-altering medical procedures to try to present as a woman, facial feminization surgery, had his, you know, manhood removed. I mean, you name it. And so Ori was nice enough to come in, sit down with me for about an hour. It was such an emotional interview. And I think what he really just wants, because, you know, I think the phrase detransitioner is a misnomer. You can't detransition when you've done what Ori has done to his body. There's no getting your manhood back. There's no undoing some of the surgeries and impacts of hormones. So I don't think you can really detransition at that point. You can just in your mind realize, gosh, I was just a gay man this whole time. I've destroyed my body and you know, was convinced to do this by people who didn't have my best interests in mind. So Ori knows he can't really detransition. And I think that was clear. And that's still very, very hard on him to come to this realization that there's no going back for him. But what there is, and I think what he wants out of this, is for young people and people in positions of power to hear his story, to listen to other people like him who've actually gone through this, and to understand how negative and irreversible the trauma of radical gender ideology is.
Are you happy with who you are right now?
I haven't gotten to the place of forgiving myself for believing the lie. So no, I'm happy with my husband. And that's just the thing. Like, I didn't come to this position because my surgery was botched. I didn't come to it because life got too hard. I actually came to the position of detransition at the height of my life. Mm-hmm. I'm well off. I have a loving husband. I have two dogs, the white picket fence, the Tiffany on my hand. And I just realized it was all a lie. And I couldn't live with it. And there's no real fully going back. There's just figuring out how to live a life like this, where you bought a lie, you removed your genitals. I'll never fully pass as one or the other. People will always be confused when they see me. And if I express myself in a non-conforming way, they're just not even gonna know I'm a gay guy, generally. And if I go too far mask, it'll impact my husband.
Can you envision, I mean, you're still so young, can you envision at some point feeling finally comfortable in your body?
I don't think I'll ever feel comfortable in my body again. Mm-hmm. I think that the best I'm going to get is finding some way to let go of how I feel about what I've done. And be at peace that I did what I could to make sure nobody else does it.
And what would your message be to young people who are struggling with these same issues, or even to parents who are watching who might have a kid who's starting to bring up?
The idea of true trans is a lie. It's a lie that's been perpetuated for decades. There is no reason to medicalize a non-conforming gay boy or a non-conforming gay woman. Most of the people who are gay who feel like this, 80% of them will desist as they grow up. They will stop thinking that they're women or stop thinking that they're men if you just let them grow up. And the vast majority of homosexuals I have met who have medicalized as far as I have are survivors. Upwards of 50% of the men I know who have had bottom surgery, who have medicalized, who are gay, are survivors. They're lying to our entire society, and it's coming at the cost of children and survivors.
Yeah, tough. And I think one of the aspects of that interview that I think it surprised me in the moment, but talking about his relationship with his husband, and his husband, you know, married someone who basically presented as a woman. And so Ari is, you could tell, kind of terrified about, because Ari still looks like very feminine. And I talked to him about that in the interview, you know, still has longer hair, comes across because of all these surgeries. I mean, I still don't think he looks like a woman, but definitely comes across more feminine. And he's worried about reverting to his true self because of who his husband married. I don't know anything about their relationship, but I imagine, you know, it's a bizarre, tough situation to be in. And so I give Ari all the credit in the world, even going through all of this right now, being willing to sit down and talk about it. But you can tell during so many parts of the interview how traumatized he still is and how he's struggling with what he did to his body. And he knows he can't undo it, and just trying to create meaning out of that experience somehow to help other people. So I absolutely love Ari. Second time meeting him, so glad he's now becoming this outspoken character in this whole saga that we have nationally. If you want to watch that full interview, it's up right now for subscribers in our weekly show, Sundays with Subscribers. Great time to become a subscriber to check that out. And also, of course, we have that discount promo code, the number 300, going on right now. It gets you 30% off. Okay. All right. Coming up next, Bob Ferguson. Some people have wet dreams. Nicole's like, stop saying wet dreams on the show. Some people have sex dreams. Yeah. Okay. Progressives have wet dreams about taking your money and dishing it out to their cronies. That's what they dream about at night. And Bob Ferguson's about to make those dreams a reality. Nicole's going to fire me from my own show. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. We could all save a little money. How about thousands of dollars a year? You know, we need insurance. So the question is, are you handling it yourself? And if you're handling your insurance yourself, are you confident that you have the right insurance to fit your needs and that you have that insurance at the best price? If the answer is no, then there's no downside to taking the First Mark Challenge. I've taken it. We now insure our home and business through First Mark. So many Undivided viewers and listeners have taken the First Mark Challenge as well and are now members of the First Mark family. So has our friend Brock Huard.
Yeah, you are technically their customer, but you will find this out when you make that call. They're your teammate right alongside with you, only wanting the best for you and rooting for the best for you and taking away all the stress and confusion that comes with this crazy insurance world.
Yeah, and there is a lot of confusion. I didn't realize how confused I was about the insurance we had until First Mark explained it to me. I'm like, wow, I didn't even realize I had it, insurance for that and this, and I don't even need that. So firstmarkinsurance.com, totally free to take the First Mark Challenge, and then you never pay First Mark anything for their services, and you could save thousands of dollars a year. So super no-brainer, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. You could be our next First Mark Challenge victory. All right. Bob Ferguson has long since shed his cloak of moderacy and is gearing up tomorrow to sign into law a laundry list of progressive demands. And so, you know, any inclination that Bob was going to be more moderate, of course, is long out the window. He's also going to sign the budget. Tuesday, tomorrow happens to be the final day to sign bills that were passed during this session. And he doesn't have to sign it. I think that's the misnomer. He can sign, veto, or just do nothing with it. And if he does nothing with it, it becomes law. So there's sort of this decision making about what bills do I want to have an event and sign, and those are the ones he really, really loves or really thinks his constituency or his voting base loves. So he wants to make a point out of it. But I think it also shows his priorities, right, of what he wants to be seen signing into law. So budget aside, we're going to dive deep into the budget tomorrow. I'm hopeful that the governor will veto a few things, but probably nothing to be meaningful. It's still going to be the largest tax increase in state history. What I don't want is for him to come out, because he's strategic, right, and say, oh, I'm vetoing this, and make a big show out of it. So that's the headline, but the result is still billions in additional taxes. So we'll see if the media falls for that if he does it. So we'll focus on the budget tomorrow, but let's talk about some of these other insane bills today. So one of the craziest that has really flown under the radar, and it feeds into this obsession with helping illegal criminal aliens, is House Bill 1131. So this has to do with pardons and commutations, which, okay, fine, they're trying to get criminals out of prison earlier all the time. But remember, second to last page, if you look at this bill, ledge.wa.gov, just type in 1131, it'll pop up, second to last page, page 14. It accelerates the pardon process, the review process for pardons and commutations to help illegal aliens who are in our prison system move to the front of the line. It says, if a petitioner indicates in the petition an urgent need for the pardon or commutation, including but not limited to a pending deportation order or deportation proceeding, the board shall consider expedited review of the application. So why this is so significant to me is it throws out the window completely this argument that, oh, we don't want them going after otherwise law-abiding undocumented immigrants. Because that's the narrative, right? But this is specifically and only to help illegal aliens serving time in our state prison system. That's the only people it helps. So now you're going out of your way to try to protect from deportation an illegal alien who committed a crime that was so serious they got sent to state prison. In our state, we don't send people to prison for nothing. Well, you know that by now. But we don't have a lot of people in our prison system serving time for non-violent offenses. The vast, vast majority of our prison population is there for a violent crime. And so that means that Democrats sat down during the session and asked themselves, how can we help illegal aliens who commit violent crimes stay in our state after they get out of prison? They spent time doing that. And the result was 1131. It's really, truly insane. And again, anytime they want to make the argument, anytime you hear any Democrat making the argument, you know, we just want undocumented immigrants who are just trying to raise a family and have a better life and work and pay taxes. We just want them protected from deportation. Bring this up and say, okay, what were you doing here? What was this about then? What was the goal of this? Because they can't spin this in any sort of way. I would also note it's kind of dumb because I don't see how that protects them from deportation. So you can have somebody who's been convicted and they get pardoned by the governor. And like, yeah, their record technically would be wiped clean as if it never happened. So I guess for a future run-in with ICE, that might help. But ICE is still deporting people even if they don't have criminal convictions. And if ICE has been sitting there for 7-8 years waiting for someone to get out of prison so they can deport them from the country, they already know about them. Like a commutation or a pardon from the governor is not going to change that. So I don't really know what the purpose, maybe just virtue signaling, but it's a really dumb thing to virtue signal over. Pass some bill helping people who are undocumented and haven't committed any other crimes besides crossing the border. Do that. That's at least what I'd expect of you, right? Not quite as controversial, still dumb. Still a misguided priority. I mean, they did that in all sorts of other, helping illegal aliens with legal expenses and helping illegal aliens with more medical care and funded all these things for illegal aliens while they cut from services that people actually need. It's just wild. So 1131, Bob Ferguson's going to be more than happy to sign that. Of course, Tuesday morning, so tomorrow morning, he's going to be signing House Bill 1163, which is permit to purchase a firearm. Which is an insane policy, but of course his entire time as Attorney General was marked by his desire to strip people of their Second Amendment rights, all the while suing Donald Trump and preaching about how Donald Trump hates the Constitution while he upends the Second Amendment and gives a big middle finger to people who love the Constitution. So not a surprise he's going to sign that. Keep in mind, it doesn't actually take effect until I think 2027. If they can get the infrastructure in place to do this, because there's a lot of bureaucracy that goes along with instituting permit to purchase. So you still have some time to be able to buy a firearm without having to go to live fire training at a range, paying an additional fee and going through all these other hoops to be able to buy it. So if you're going to buy it now. All right. Also happening tomorrow morning, Bob Ferguson is going to upend the Parental Rights Initiative. It feels like we've been talking about the efforts to unwind the Parental Bill of Rights for 7 years now, even though it only became law last year. But certainly a lot of the legislative session was spent trying to raise alarm bells that Democrats were doing this, and Bob Ferguson's going to sign it. So, you know, don't let him fool you that he cares about parents and he cares about families and he cares about education. He's going to sign House Bill 1296, which erases key aspects of the Parental Bill of Rights that around 500,000 Washingtonians signed via initiative just last year. So not only does he not care about parents, not only does he not care about parental rights and the quality of education, because that's what a lot of it, of this is about, making sure that they're not obsessing over radical gender ideology and parents know if they are so they can call them out on it, because parents should have a right to know what's happening. So not only is Bob hook, line, sinker with the progressives on trying to break apart the nuclear family, but he also doesn't care about voters, because this is at its core undermining democracy. How many times has Bob Ferguson talked about Donald Trump being a threat to democracy? And they're going to go in there and unwind a voter initiative a year after passing it into law to keep it from going to voters. And then, of course, we know that Let's Go Washington has been planning on running another initiative to restore the Parental Bill of Rights. So stay tuned for that, because I think there's going to be some action alerts to make sure that if you signed the initial one, you have a quick opportunity to sign the new one when and if it comes out, and that you can get your friends and family to do the same. So just a couple things that Bob Ferguson is going to be signing tomorrow, and then we will see what happens with the budget, but we're expecting him to sign at least the bulk of it. So about $10 billion in new taxes, which will increase costs thousands of dollars a year for Washington families. So, you know, it's an interesting place for Bob Ferguson to end the session, I guess. I mean, he started it acting like he was a Republican, basically, and now he's ending it being almost borderline socialist Marxist. And, you know, he signed rent control and all that crazy stuff. But I almost hope the outcome is you know, the right already didn't like him. But now the moderates have to be feeling like they've been betrayed because he didn't do what he said he was going to do, especially the business community. So they all don't like him. And then the progressives are mad at him for not coming out in favor of some of these policies earlier on in the session. So maybe Bob will just has just made enemies out of everyone. And then, you know, maybe he's beatable before running for a second term. So maybe, I don't know, maybe not. People's memories are very short and the media doesn't do its job. So, all right. Yes, Nicole? What? Oh, no, not today. Tomorrow. Thanks. Nicole is trying to remind me of something, but I skipped over it on purpose. All right. Zach Abraham, our friend at Bulwark Capital, he's going to have another one of his live webinars coming up pretty quick. It's coming up on the 22nd, which is this Thursday. And this one is going to focus specifically on tariffs. So if you've been concerned about the radical, you know, shifts in the stock market, what it means for your retirement portfolio amid all the tariffs, tiffs, then this is the webinar for you. You can listen in totally passively if you just want to get his analysis on what's going on. You can also ask questions. And I think the goal is that you come away knowing whether your retirement portfolio is properly protected against risks associated with, you know, any economic policy, but certainly the economic policies being rolled out by the Trump administration right now. So they'll do a talk about tariffs, longer term outlook for 2025, and a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So sign up for Zach's free live webinar. Did I mention it's totally free? Coming up this Thursday, May 22nd, register now, knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Do I have to? Sometimes unbelievable is so unbelievable, and I'm too tired to really properly express my disgust that I just want to skip it. But I won't. I think we have a double dose of unbelievable today. The first, did you know that condoms at any age are just fine, a totally natural thing to buy. So even if you're a little 8-year-old, the Teen Council wants you to know you can buy condoms too. Unbelievable. Oh man, so we already warned you guys about something called the Teen Council because they go out and they recruit teen sexperts. So they want kids teaching kids about sex, which maybe I'd prefer that to random teachers teaching kids about sex in their own way, because that turns out to be weird as well. But this is basically a Trojan horse for Planned Parenthood to infiltrate our schools. That's what it is. So it's part of Planned Parenthood. It's the Teen Council. And a lot of different schools have these where, you know, teens can be part of teaching sex education to their peers. But a lot of the stuff they teach is just downright weird. And we did a whole previous segment on some of the really bizarre, like radical gender ideology, trans ideology stuff that gets shared through Teen Council. This one was sent to us over the weekend. And it's just like, why? Why is this something that we're allowing in any school environment? You know, I gotta love them all standing around with their dildos on the table, learning to put condoms on, which I get it. I get it. Safe sex. We learn about safe sex too. Can't you use a banana, though? There's just something that makes me feel better if you just use a banana. And those banana.
They specifically mentioned that those are made of wood.
Gotcha.
Of course.
Of course. Great. But here's the thing that really kind of freaks me out. So the Teen Council, and again, these a lot of the times their social media accounts, they're specific toward local schools, but they put out a lot of the same content. So it says teen sexual healthcare rights in Washington. So it's a flyer that teens can use to inform other teens about their rights in Washington from a sexual health perspective. This is insane. So the first little block says age of consent for sex. It says the age of consent is 16. However, they want you to know, it is not a crime if you are 11 and have sex with somebody 2 years older or less, 12 to 13 and have sex with somebody who is 3 years older or less, 14 to 15 and have sex with somebody who's 4 years older or less, or 16 and 17 and have sex with someone who is 5 years older or less. Why do we need to be telling 11-year-olds that it's not a crime if they have sex with someone as long as that person is less than 2 years older than them? What on God's green earth is the purpose of that? Absolutely insane. Talks about emergency contraception. Talks about birth control. You know, some of this teens are learning anyway. Talks about condoms. You can buy a condom at any age. You can get birth control at any age. Abortion. You do not need permission from your parent or guardian to get an abortion at any age. So, you know, teaching those 11-year-olds who they just told it's totally fine for you to have sex with someone as long as they're not 2 years, more than 2 years older than you. Also, it's totally fine to get an abortion. You don't need parental consent. And of course, this is all being pushed by Planned Parenthood. And look, this is coming from someone who's pro-choice. I have never wavered in my pro-choice position. I'm not pro-choice without any qualifications, but certainly I'm fine with Washington State's law as it is. But I am certainly not fine with, one, kids who are as young as 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, going to get an abortion and their parents have no clue that they were even pregnant in the first place because you don't need parental consent for it. It's all just so strange. The only thing on here I support is the little bit about sexting, where it teaches kids about, hey, you know, okay, I mean, I get it. You don't want to encourage sexting.
Right, and at the end, by the way, it's not illegal to have sexually explicit images of yourself on your phone. Like, I think...
It says, yeah, it is illegal to send, possess, display, or share text messages or pictures of an explicit sexual nature from another person under the age of 18, even if you have permission. So I think that's a good thing for them to know, because this stuff is actually happening, right? Like, hey, you could actually be charged with a serious crime if you do this, but it's okay. You know, that 11-year-old, we just told you it's okay if you have sex with someone. You know, it's you can have these, you can possess sexually explicit images of yourself at any age. Right. Why are we doing this?
And also, I just love, I'm pretty sure that top right photo in birth control is the puberty blocker.
I love how they're teaching puberty blockers as birth control. Is that a puberty blocker? Yeah, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Could also be an you talk about the things shaped like a T?
That's the T one, the one on the top corner, like right corner.
Oh, gotcha.
That is like, they just put it under the skin. That's the puberty blocker.
Yeah, well, and you know that the teen council is all these kids are talking about because they all convince each other to be transgender, you know, mm-hmm. and then letting them know, hey, you can do this without your parents' consent. This is legal to do this, legal to do this. They want kids to push the boundaries. They're sexualizing kids, okay? That's what it boils down to. They're absolutely sexualizing kids. It's creepy. It's wrong. If your kid joins the teen council, immediately remove them from it and prohibit them from talking to anyone who's on the teen council. Ridiculous. Planned Parenthood has no place in schools. All right, let's get to a second edition of Unbelievable. And of course, Planned Parenthood can't just contain its activity to high schools, has to go into colleges as well, where arguably there would be more of a necessity for Planned Parenthood to be talking about safe sex practices with adults who are in college. So, you know, that's a little boring for Planned Parenthood, you know? Oh, the college kids already know all this stuff. How else can we sink our claws into lefties and make them lifelong donors to Planned Parenthood and lifelong patients? Well, let's talk to them about normalizing not just sex, but drug abuse. Great. So, University of Washington, Generation Action. Our local group is fighting for the freedom to control our own bodies. Okay, it sounds like an abortion message. Okay. And our futures by creating campus campaigns that empower student voices and experiences. So it says, part of Planned Parenthood Advocacy, it's this group, Generation Action. And just by that little description there, it sounds like, okay, yeah, you should be able to control your own body as a college kid. I mostly agree with that. I can't really think of any aspect of that that I disagree with, although I don't want college kids mutilating themselves either. But at that point, you're an adult and you can kind of do what you want to do. But they don't just stop there. So this was sent to us, and they also post about it publicly. So it's not like this is some sort of top secret thing. They're also trying to normalize. They're also trying to normalize deadly drug abuse. Yeah. This is from viewer Sarah. She says, remember when we were taught just say no and be smart, don't start? What happened to society? How is this compassionate? So it says, this past Wednesday, we held our chapter meeting in honor of Nurses Week. Our lovely operations lead and nursing student Nina gave us a very important presentation about Narcan and how to safely and properly handle situations of overdose. Happy Nurses Week to all our nurses that do so much for our community. It says, supporting people who use drugs with Narcan treatment and harm reduction. I'm glad treatment was at least in there. Right? Because isn't that the best way that you can support people who use drugs is get them help for their substance abuse? Because you're not going to help them through Narcan. You'll keep them alive, but it doesn't do anything to stop their addiction. And then we know harm reduction is just assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So harm reduction is just giving them clean needles and things they need to use to continue to put the drugs that are killing them in their bodies. I don't know why these people are so obsessed. They're so obsessed.
And they are handing out free naloxone.
Yeah, I'm fine to a certain extent with that. I'm fine with Narcan, naloxone, right. But we can't use it as this, like, it's not a solution to the drug crisis.
It doesn't make it okay.
It doesn't make it okay. Drugs. And when there's no backstop, it's like the cops will go out there and they'll revive someone 100 times. And there's no requirement that that person has to be taken into custody, taken for a medical evaluation, referred to treatment services. There's none. I literally did a story way back when I was in TV, when they just started carrying Narcan, SPD officers. Went out with two SPD officers on the street for a walk along because they were walking the beat in downtown Seattle. And these two officers had reversed more overdoses with their Narcan than any other officers. We're 2-3 minutes into this walk along. They get a call. There's a guy OD'ing in like the alley by Pike Place. So we're some of the first ones on scene. There's an interview of this and it's just wild, but this guy is dead. He's dead. He's in the alleyway, like there's tourists walking by, just nuts. Gray. And I'm like, wow, that's a dead, and I've seen, you know, dead people before. So I was like, well, that guy is dead. That's really sad. And that's crazy that we're doing this walk along on saving people's lives. And we're like some of the first on scene. And there's, you know, the paramedics were there and they were administering Narcan. And so they take this dead body and they gurney it up in the ambulance. And then the ambulance isn't moving. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess they're not heading off lights and sirens because the guy's already deceased. Oh, no. A couple minutes later, back door opens. The guy who I just saw dead in the alleyway is walking away. Just walking away because they can't force them to go to the hospital. And these drug addicts, they hate when you kill their high. So they actually wake up usually very mad because the Narcan takes that high away. And then they've got to go out and find more drugs. So they can just pop out of the back of an ambulance. Like, okay, thanks for saving my life. I'm going to go do it again. And isn't that insane? Because aren't you supposed to, like, if you're a threat to yourself or others, if I was calling 911 and I was saying, I'm going to, you know, do the unthinkable, take my own life or something, they would come and they would take you, you know, for a psych evaluation because you're a threat to yourself or you're a threat to others. If somebody's lying dead, basically, in an alleyway of their own making because they injected a deadly drug into their body, is that not, how is that not a threat to themselves? It's just crazy. So I'm okay with Narcan. Actually, that guy did an interview with him. Did I mention that part? He pops out. We chase him down, do an interview with this mm-hmm. guy, like minutes after I thought he was dead. His family sees that interview. He ends up turning his life around. Wow. And we reunited him with these officers like a year or two later. And I don't know if he's still doing well. Like when we heard back from him, he had a wife and a brand new baby, had put on like 40 pounds. So good things can happen from, you know, forcing an intervention.
Right, like if you made drugs illegal again, right. So that person with drugs, if they yep. got taken to jail, had to call family or somebody to get them out, they would have to get help.
Right.
Or the family would encourage them to get help or whatever it is. Like there would be this moment of awakening right. for them, but instead we just encourage
yeah,
it.
Some sort of intervention. So, I mean, had we not stopped him and done an interview, I don't know, he might be dead today, right? Because mm-hmm. his family wouldn't have seen him on TV, but it's just crazy. So I don't think that we should just let people die when we have a drug that can bring them back to life, but that can't be. Then we just say, oh, we did our job today. No, you didn't really do much of anything. Just unbelievable stuff. All right, we got to get to some national news. There's a lot of Biden news. There is a lot of Biden news, and I suppose that we can talk about it, even though it's just angering me. So first, you know, the former president has cancer. And that's sad. So obviously, I'll set that there. New York Times, Biden is diagnosed with an aggressive form of prostate cancer. The cancer has metastasized to the bone, according to a statement from Mr. Biden's personal office. So it says the diagnosis came after Mr. Biden reported urinary symptoms, which led doctors to find a small nodule on his prostate. His cancer is, quote, characterized by a Gleason score of 9. The Gleason score is used to describe how prostate cancers look under a microscope. 9 and 10 are the most aggressive. The cancer is stage 4, which means it has spread. So look, I know there's a lot of armchair medical professionals on X, but I will say the consensus, even with left-leaning media, right-leaning media, talking heads on both sides, seems to be that it's very unlikely this is the first time they've known about this. Especially with the rigorous sort of health assessments of someone who's in the office of the presidency, that it could get to this point and this is the first indication they have that he has stage 4 aggressive prostate cancer that has metastasized to the bone. So anything I say about that is just going to be, you know, based on my thoughts about it. Obviously, none of these talking heads can say for sure that his doctors knew, but based on everything I've read, again, across the political spectrum, it just seems like they've known about this for some time. And I would also say, do you have the 2022? Can we jump ahead to that? So remember when we were all like, Biden's losing his mind, and one of the examples was back in 2022, he said during an event that he had cancer.
And because it was a 4-lane highway that was accessible, my mother drove us, and rather than us be able to walk. And guess what? The first frost, you knew what was happening. You had to put on your windshield wipers to get literally the oil slick off the window. That's why I and so damn many other people I grew up have cancer, and why I can't for the longest time. Delaware had the highest cancer rate in the nation.
Yeah, so people were like, oh, what? And then it was sort of chalked up to his age and his mental faculties, and he was just sort of losing it. But did he know he actually had cancer in 2022? I wouldn't take that off the table, especially considering how much has been hidden and lied about when it comes to the former president's health. There's also another reason why, if I'm adding all the pieces together, it seems like maybe there's a motivation for having hidden it, only to now come out and say his cancer is so bad, it's like, you know, end stage, basically. So this announcement that he has cancer and it's so serious came out after a 1-2 punch of these other stories related to his health. So first, the Her tapes came out. So you remember back when there was the whole controversy over, like, Trump keeping classified documents, and then, oh, Biden has some classified documents too. With Trump, they raid Mar-a-Lago and search through Melania's closet, the FBI. And Biden, they sit down for these just nice interviews about whether the poor old man knew that he had these documents that he shouldn't have. And so in October of 2023, there was two sessions where then President Biden sat down with a special counsel tasked with investigating this, Robert Hur. And you remember that Robert Hur came out and said, yeah, he had documents he wasn't supposed to have, but I'm not going to prosecute him because I'd basically be accused of elder abuse. And, you know, he's probably not wrong because these tapes have now come out. And I think we just have one clip, right, where you can tell, like, how bad Biden was. And this is while the media was all screaming that he was just fine.
So during this time, we were living in Chambers Road, and there were documents related to the Penn Biden Center or the Biden or the Cancer Focus Shot or your book. Where did you keep papers that related to those things that you were actively working on?
Well, I don't know. This is, what, 2017, 18, that period?
Yes, sir.
Remember, in this time frame, my son is either been deployed or is dying. And so it was... And by the way, there were still a lot of people at the time when I got out of the Senate that were encouraging me to run in this period.
Yeah, no.
Except the president. I'm not a mean thing to say. I mean, he just thought that she had a better shot of winning the presidency than I did.
So he is totally confused about his times. His son Beau died in 2015. He's thinking it's 2018. He's talking about like the 2016 election. So you can tell. I mean, he's having a rough go of it, right? So those tapes come out, and they come out at a time when there's this book written by Jake Tapper, and it's called Original Sin, and a guy named Alex Thompson that talks about, it's called Original Sin, President Biden's Decline, Its Cover-Up, and His Disastrous Choice to Run Again. And it goes into, and look, I refuse to read it. I'm going to be honest, because Jake Tapper can kick rocks. Jake Tapper was one of the key players, key characters in the cover-up, and would rip anyone who talked about Biden's mental acuity, including Trump's daughter-in-law. There's that infamous clip. So the fact that Jake Tapper wants to turn around and grift and like, Democrats hid this from every... Dude, you hid it from everyone. I'm not giving you a cent. I'm not reading your book. Just stupid. But the book is out. And so you have the book out, where now Democrats are like having to answer for all these things behind the scenes that were happening with Biden, accusations his aides were hiding him from his cabinet because he was so far gone. And then there's the Her tapes. So could it be that they're finally coming out with a long since known cancer diagnosis to get sympathy and to distract and to say, hey, you can't be hard on Biden and talk about his mental acuity because he's got cancer. You know, I mean, yes, that's probably what's happening. That's just my opinion based on the preponderance of the evidence and how they've treated Biden and manipulated the American public to date. So like, look, I'm when somebody's dealing with that, and he's clearly near the end of his life, I think he has been for several years now. I don't want to be mean. I don't want to act like that's not sad and it's not a big deal. But that doesn't mean that we can't talk about all these other things after we've been misled for years and years and years and lied to about his health. So sympathy, yes, but we're not going to go put our heads back in the sand over this. And it's just in the media. It just, you know, I talk all the time about the press and their refusal to admit when they're wrong. And that's been one of the biggest issues that has led to the downfall of the legacy media. They want to hold everyone else accountable for their behavior, but they want no one talking about what they do. They deem that as an attack on the First Amendment. It's an attack on America if you question the press. And so they don't, you know, like the laptop, Hunter Biden's laptop. It was a conspiracy until it wasn't. And then all of a sudden they picked up the story like nothing ever happened without acknowledging like we made a mistake. We were wrong. We're sorry. We'll do better. Here are the steps we're taking to make sure it doesn't happen again. And they're doing the same thing now with the Biden health issue. I mean, Jake Tapper, obviously, writing a book about it. He's tried to acknowledge a little bit here and there about, you know, maybe some of my coverage wasn't as good as it should have been, but he's not off the hook on this. This is two headlines from the New York Times from the same opinion writer, Michelle Goldberg. Good grief. One is from a year ago. Biden's age is a campaign problem, not a governing one. Fast forward to 3 days ago. How did so many elected Democrats miss Biden's infirmity? Well, I don't know. Maybe they were reading your opinion pieces in the New York Times, Michelle. Isn't that nuts? And you're surprised, I guess, that so many Americans don't trust you anymore? That's what I don't get is like, just have people don't expect the media to be perfect. But when you can't even acknowledge obvious egregious errors and you feel like you have to cover for yourself to save face, then you're hopeless. Absolutely hopeless. So I'm sad that Biden, you know, has cancer. I'm sad for his family. It's not a surprise. It's not a surprise he's nearing the end of his life. I felt that he was a couple years ago as well. But it's not going to, at least not here, give him free cover, give Democrats free cover from us talking about how they lied to the American public during the presidential campaign. It's just insane. All right, we'll get to comments coming up next and some great news out of Texas. Really happy for you guys. I promise. I'm super happy for you. If you're thinking about moving to Texas because of all the glorious things happening there, our friend Wes Jones could help you out with that. Wes has been doing real estate in our area for a really long time. Wes knows this market like the back of his hand. He's been through all the market ups and downs. And what he's going to specialize in is one, making sure that your home, when it hits the market, that listing outshines every other listing. I mean, you look at their market material and compare it to other homes that hit the market, there's no comparison at all. And they're going to come in and make sure that any cosmetic upgrades that really do need to be done to add to the value of your home that you're going to actually make money on, that those can get done, even if it means taking over the projects for you, handling contractors, and helping you with it so you don't have to pay for those changes until closing, which I think takes a big stress off of home sellers. So if you're thinking about selling your home, to move to Texas or anywhere else, really, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. Okay, no subscriber poll today because I was at the court hearing and I came here and I apologize. Don't be mad at me. All right, comments. Can we talk quick, Nicole? I got to tell people about Emerald Downs. So you couldn't come this weekend. So, of course, we do the annual Dory Monson Memorial Purse race at Emerald Downs, which is so nice of Emerald Downs to do that. Yes. And it was fantastic. And you know, they play these tribute videos to Dory on the big screen, you know, between races. They interviewed me and Suzanne, Dory's wife, in the sort of green area where all the horses, you know, gather. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you call that. There's a fancy horse race word for it.
Oh my gosh.
But it was all Dory all the time at this event, right? And it's so great. And it was a pretty packed day at the track.
Even with the rain, I'm glad.
It rained for a little bit, then it was nice out. Mm-hmm. So I just need to set the stage here because it's like a Dory love fest on the screen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Only to come to find out, it also was Teacher Appreciation Day.
Dory loved good teachers.
Dory loved good teachers. Don't get me wrong. And I love good teachers too. But I just sat there like, oh my gosh, this is glorious. Because you know how many triggered teachers there were having to sit and watch this massive screen.
The big union fan teachers.
Oh yeah, just the big WEA contingent that was probably so triggered by having to sit at the races and listen to people glow and gush about Dory Monson. It gave me double the joy.
Good.
I was already joyful, and then it gave me double the joy.
I love that.
So, yeah, that was hilarious, and I just thought, oh, that's Dory's doing there. All
Did you win any money?
No, I have never.
Jeanette
and I will say.
Has won both years, last year and this year.
We've been doing this for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have never won one bet. And look, do I look at the program for 5 seconds, pick a name I like, and then put it all on to win? Yes. Is that the best betting strategy? No. Would Dory think that was a good strategy? No. And he's probably punishing me because every race I've bet on, I've lost for 3 years in a row.
Oh, man. I gave some money to Matt and said, put this on whoever Jeanette picks. She picks winners.
Oh.
And he's like, okay. And then he texted me that he lost and Jeanette said she won. And I was like, did you not put my money on Jeanette's horse? And he's like, she didn't tell me which horse.
He just pocketed it. He just pocketed it. I'm sure. It was fun, though.
Good,
all right,
good.
Darla, I worked for the courts years ago, and it was standard practice to inform ICE and detain those scheduled for release until ICE picked them up. This was in the early 2000s. That was before all this sanctuary BS was implemented. I'm glad the judge declined to dismiss it. Yeah. Sean, yes, we absolutely need Homan here ASAP. The employers shuffle these illegals around because they are never on the same site for more than 2 to 3 days. I'm sure there's a lot of that right now. I'm sure there's a lot of that right now where it's like, you're working here today and there tomorrow because we don't want ICE to come snatch up our workforce. But again, it's the same conversation, but we're not talking about the people who are on job sites, you know, minding their own business besides being illegal. We're talking about someone accused of killing a cop. Why are we having a 2.5 year hour hearing over whether to dismiss it because a prosecutor told ICE about him? Crazy. Mm. Baron of Gray Matter, $5 super chat. Thank you. Narcan and harm reduction is suicidal empathy. It keeps NGOs funded and Democrats elected. Yeah, because, again, they don't want to fix it. You know how much money some of these NGOs get to go buy harm reduction supplies to put in little kits so they can get handed out to people so they can keep them in addiction so they can keep the money coming in? It's 100% what it was. They don't want people to get better. If they get better, the money goes away. Hello, watermelon. Keeping people enslaved to sexual desires, to drugs, to debt, enslaved to your emotions instead of having self-control and discipline. Yep, they want us all one army of, what do you call it when you can't tell if someone's a boy or a girl?
Oh.
Asexual? No, that's not it. You know, androgynous.
Androgynous,
they just
there
want one big army of androgynous sheeple. That's
sheeple,
what they want. Adorable, deplorable. I'm still trying to figure out why Democrats hate women so much. I mean, they're supposed to stand for women's rights. So why didn't they show up and vote for them? Yeah, that's a good question. Good question. Mm-hmm. I need a drink. Can I give Starbucks a free ad quick?
Oh, sure.
You know, Starbucks, one day you're going to have to pay me. Nicole got me an energy drink before the show.
It's to balance our coverage last week. This week, so they don't spit in it, right?
Well, yeah. What I didn't... Oh, yeah. Starbucks probably not going to sponsor this show. What I didn't tell you, because I didn't want you to worry too much before the show, Nicole had to do all the work for the show today because I was up in court. But I got maybe 45 minutes of sleep last night.
Oh, man.
I have my... Again, I hate to talk about my medical issues.
Speaking
my
of Dory, you pulled a Dory.
My RLS is so bad. I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I do not know what to do. I've tried all these little tips and tricks. I even got a TENS unit, which like shocks your legs.
Yeah, electric.
Just to like help the... I got a massage yesterday. Nothing helps. It's so bad. I cannot sleep.
Okay.
I don't know what to do.
I might have somebody that you can go see.
Oh, it's going to be one of your hippie doctors.
It is.
Okay.
But he's very hard to get into.
All right.
You have to know somebody.
As long as he's not going to poke my legs with needles.
No,
I'm not doing
that. Magic hands. Okay. It's shiatsu.
Okay. It sounded sexual, but I don't know. Okay. Kate, plan B and a bag of chips. Quit normalizing this behavior. I did notice in that photo, it was like they were handing out all these things. It was like plan B next to the bag of chips. It's like, just you eat them like chips.
Yeah.
Have sex. Just eat them like
and,
chips.
You know, I have not taken Plan B. I can't speak from experience, but thanks I know somebody who did. Okay. Well, I didn't want people to think that like this is a regular thing for me. But it's not a pleasant thing to take and go through after you take it. And so it kind of messes with your system. So it's like, don't take that like it's vitamins.
Well,
you don't
right.
just take
eating,
it every
like,
morning because you're like, well, I don't want to use condoms. I'll just Plan B it.
And good how can you grief. Afford that? Well, I guess if you get it for free.
Well, they're handing
how
it out.
How much does a Plan B pill cost?
I have no idea.
I tried to trick you there you go. To like catch you in a lie. I don't know. All right, Brian, I think most people want to believe the legacy press because sunlight is the best disinfectant and we rely on the press to present the facts, except when it involves politics. It is disappointing. We need the media. The media is supposed to stand in the breach for us and they don't. And it's not just that they're not... you know, giving us the full picture, it's that they're actively pushing lies. So when you tell people, don't believe what you're seeing and hearing, like don't believe that Biden's infirm, don't believe that he's not cognitively able to be the president. And you're like, well, what? But do you see him? Have you heard him? And then they turn around and they convince you that you're crazy or
and
you're
a
conspiracist.
I believe it's a propaganda issue because it's politicians telling them to do that. Like
yeah.
It is 100%. The lefty politicians that are like, make sure you get out there that this is not a problem. Like, don't tell them this. Like, tell them this. It is propaganda.
Yeah. I'm kind of the hand up the bum puppet in them.
Right.
I mean, fully. All right. We got a special birthday today.
I know. I saw that.
It's Crafty Grandma Crispy's birthday.
Yeah.
I don't know how to work your name into. I'm just going to say Grandma.
Good.
Today is my 56th birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Crafty Grandma Crispy. Happy birthday to you. Great. Love it. Thank you, Nicole. That really added a lot. All right. Okay, good stuff. Yeah. Appreciate it with that. Let's get to our closing sanity. Wow, I'm all duped up on this energy drink. Closing sanity check. Lot. I'm going to crash hard. When I crash, it's going to be hard. All right. So, of course, one of the many things that's happening on the budget front in Washington State is an increase in the capital gains tax. While we're increasing our capital gains tax and trying to scare away investments and rich people from our state, Texas is saying, not happening here.
Hi, this is Governor Greg Abbott, and I am about to sign a joint resolution that will constitutionally ban a capital gains tax in the state of Texas.
That's nice.
Voters will vote on this to ensure that we're not going to have a capital gains tax in the state of Texas. The next tax law that I will sign will be a tax law to reduce your property taxes in Texas.
One can dream. Wouldn't it be nice? That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's delayed edition of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Again, help us reach our goal of adding 300 paid subscribers over the next 30 days. We're well on our way. We appreciate all the individuals who've been freeloading to date and decided, you know, Brandy, 30% off is a really good reason to finally subscribe. Not to mention, you're just great and we love you. That was me pretending to be viewer talking about how great I am, in case you missed that. Use the promo code 300, that's the number 300, at patreon.com/undivided, patreon.com/undivided. Promo code is the number 300. Don't wait, that promo's not sticking around forever. All right. See you tomorrow. Crash is coming. Crash is coming.